good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio in rainy downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. It's the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 11:30 news, as he does every other Thursday, the Acme Packing Company sports guru Paul Noonan will be here to talk all things sports. Good game from the Brewers last night against the Dodgers. By the way, the crew hosting the Dodgers this afternoon, our broadcast starts at 12:35. We do not stream it, but you can listen live on terrestrial radio, WISS 98.3 FM, 1100 AM in Oshkosh, and also WRJN 99.9 FM, 1400 AM in Racine, and in Kenosha 98.1 FM. The Brewers and the Dodgers today. The game starts broadcasting at 12:35. We are working out some details with Morgan Sweet from the Pabst Mansion. They have a big capital campaign underway. They're raising $5 million to help fix the exterior. The work is going to focus on repairs and preserving the mansion's bricks, mortar, and terracotta elements to maintain the grandeur and historical integrity. The harsh freeze-thaw cycle has taken a toll on the structure. I know they've had problems with leaks in the past. There have been other issues. So this is a very exciting thing. I certainly hope they can make this happen. There used to be a whole lot more of those old beer baron mansions along Wisconsin Avenue, and the Pabst Mansion now is one of the few that is left. All right, Morgan Sweet is here from the Pabst Mansion. Good morning, Morgan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about this capital campaign. You're shooting to raise $5 million, and from what I understand, you're at, what, 1.5 so far?
We're about at 1.5, so we definitely have quite a bit of ways to go. And this capital campaign, first of all, it's probably the least sexy project. It is, you know, windows, our exterior, the roof. What the professionals call it is the envelope of the building, because it is what seals the building from the elements. And it's stuff that you really can't see. So if you come to the mansion, you'll walk in and you'll see that it's just been stunningly restored and maintained, and it's very ornate and beautiful. And what you don't see is water infiltration that is coming in from the outside. So it's kind of hard, because it's one of those things where when we're done with the project, almost nobody will know that we did it except us, yeah. Who are no longer putting buckets under
But that just makes me think of the Milwaukee Public Museum, Morgan, because I had the opportunity to go there a couple of years ago, and they took me around the basement, and they literally had systems of buckets. It was nuts, and there's all these things you have to protect, obviously, at the museum with all of the collections that they have, but certainly at the Pabst Mansion, if the roof is leaking, that endangers everything. Anybody who's ever owned a home, when my husband and I bought our house, everything had to be done. We started with the roof.
Yeah, it's really the basics. So, you know, if you own a home, you do tuck pointing to your brick. Your chimney has to be rebuilt sometimes. You know, I just bought a home and we did an inspection, and that was actually one of the things, is tuck pointing and chimney. And I was like, great, I yeah. know these things from work. It's, you know, a lot less expensive on my house than the mansion.
No doubt.
Yeah, when you buy a house, you're just like, yep, throw it on the bill, I guess, whatever. What's another $500 or way more?
Because it's like money in, money out.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the mansion, everything, it's, you know, essentially what you do at your home, just on a much larger scale. You know, first of all, it's 20,000 square feet. So quite a bit larger than, you know, all of our homes, I have to assume, at least.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And then I think the other thing is, you know, Captain Pabst did not do anything cheap. So in some ways, you know, we are, you know, when they say a champagne taste on a beer budget, well, apparently a beer budget got you quite a bit.
If people have never been to the Pabst Mansion, Morgan, just the quality of the materials that were used is that stuff is priceless now because this was built in the late 1890s, right?
Yeah, 1892 is when the family moved in, and it's a terracotta home. So it's something that's really unique. There's not a lot of other homes that look like it. Very ornate, even in the servant areas or in the back portion of the house. You know, I feel like a lot of these mansions, you know, even though they are grand, you know, you go to the back half of the house and it's just brick. Mm. Like there's a facade in the front, but here, you know, we've got it on all sides. So we've got just that many more chimneys and gables and dormers and, you know, ornate terracotta to repair and replace.
And also, like, if you, I, or Jane want to redo our house, maybe get a new roof or put in new windows, I'm assuming that the Pabst Mansion, you have to consult with different people on what you can and cannot do because it's a historical building. Therefore, you have to, like, adhere to codes.
Yes. And I...
Which isn't cheap, I hear.
No, it's not. And I think in some ways... You know, that doesn't impede us as much as it might a developer because our mission is to, you know, preserve and protect and share this piece of history. I think it's probably more frustrating for like homeowners or building developers who are just trying to, you know, live in a place or wow. open a new building. But yeah, it's quite the process. It obviously takes a lot of time for us to make sure that we are adhering to all of those standards, but at the same time, there's a reason for the standards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Morgan Sweet is our guest with the Pabst Mansion, and we're talking about their capital campaign trying to raise $5 million. As you said at the top, Morgan, not necessarily sexy fixes because we're talking about tuck pointing and, you know, chimney repairs and roof repairs. But any homeowner knows that if those things are not solid, then you're putting the whole rest of the structure at risk.
Yeah.
So, and I want to go back to and I've been to the Pabst Mansion a number of times. The woodwork in Captain Pabst's study I don't know that there's anything else like that in the world.
Yeah, and that was, so that room originally, when we became a museum, they thought that it was imported from a German castle because it looked aged and, you know, it looked so much like it would be from there. And when I want to say maybe 20, 30 years ago, when our staff was researching for the Pabst Mansion book, we realized that actually, no, it was in Milwaukee. It was made. It was made brand new, and it was stained to look antiqued.
Wow.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And my other favorite tidbit, because that is one of my favorite rooms, the woodwork in the house is just stunning, especially that room. But the ceiling, which, you know, has different phrases that Captain Pabst really liked, is just stunning. And that was actually a 21-year-old who did that. It was his first commission ever.
Really?
Yes. And he went on to do other things. But, you know, looking at it, it's like, can you imagine being 21, having your first commission be for Captain Pabst's personal study?
Yeah.
You know, and then it's, you know, again, you wouldn't find it anywhere else.
I can just imagine being that 21-year-old, just Captain Pabst walking up to you and being like, don't mess this up, kid.
Yeah.
No pressure.
No pressure whatsoever. None whatsoever.
You have all kinds of events at the Pabst Mansion, Morgan, right? You can have wedding receptions there. There are some size limitations, though. It would be for a smaller wedding, correct?
Yeah. So for weddings, I feel like we're not totally ideal unless it's a small wedding. And there's actually a reason for that. And that is Captain Pabst, when he built this home, did not build a ballroom like you might see. He did not build, you know, a huge reception room. And it's because he owned a hotel. So if he had a ton of guests, he could just put them up at his hotel.
I don't want the riffraff in my house.
Yes.
I thought you were going to go with, he was a private man who liked things small. He liked intimacy and being with. No, he's like, I have a hotel. They can stay there. I like my house clean and quiet.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, definitely the solitude. So it's definitely a large house, but we can do smaller weddings, for bigger ones, because we don't have.
Yeah, the space just isn't in there, but it would be a beautiful place for like a 30 people, You know, if you've got a small intimate wedding.
Always should be that.
Yeah,
much.
It would be. It's just the perfect place for that. We got about 2.5 minutes left. It's open always Christmas. Christmas time is a big time at the Pabst. Any other upcoming events that people can check out and kind of help support the Pabst Mansion?
Yeah, so this fall will actually be kind of a jam-packed fall. So this month, not this month, we're still in August. Summer goes by too fast.
It does.
Next month, the second or the third and fourth weeks of September, we have Oktoberfest tours.
Ooh.
And it's a little bit different from a regular tour. So first of all, it includes 4 beer samples, as well as some little nosh. So you can experience the German heritage. It's kind of like a 5 senses tour, you know, sight, sound, taste definitely as well. And the tour itself will talk about the house, but also the German influence and kind of Milwaukee's German history. So it's a little bit different. And then October has actually ended up being one of our busier months. It used to be kind of the calm before the storm of Christmas, but we debuted Illuminating the Dark tours recently, and those have been sellouts. So those are October. I will preface it by saying it is not a haunted tour. We do not believe that we're haunted. We have not experienced anything. So it's not like a haunted house. It's more dark themes, like Victorian views of death or where people may have died in the house.
We're going. Jane, we're going.
Yes. Yeah, we're totally going. Yeah. We have a break coming up. Can you stay through a short commercial break?
Yeah.
Morgan Sweet is here from the Pabst Mansion. We're going to continue our conversation. I want to talk about how long it takes to wipe down that wood. It's got to be like a month and a half. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close.
What else to do about it?
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, resident young person Calvin on the board, coming to you from our studio in rainy downtown Waukesha. You can join us. It's the same number. Call, text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream. If you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, don't forget to download the free Civic Media app wherever you get your apps, and that allows you to call and text directly from your app to any station all across Civic Media, all across the state. So check out the Civic Media app and call and text directly. We're joined by Morgan Sweet from the Pabst Mansion. They have a $5 million capital campaign going on to help raise money to, and these are all essential things, the roof, tuck pointing, outside work, things like that. And to help along, the Pabst Brewing Company has Pints for Preservation. Proceeds from kegs that are sold in the Milwaukee market this month and all of September will also contribute to that restoration effort. So go drink some beer down at the Milwaukee market and help keep the Pabst, because it is really one of the last remaining grand old mansions that Milwaukee has from its kind of founding days. Right, Morgan?
Yeah. So there used to be 70 mansions on Grand Avenue, you wouldn't know by looking at it today. Today it's Wisconsin Avenue. And we are the last one that is intact. Most of them are either no longer or offices or multifamily living. We're the only one that's intact and that you can tour too.
Yeah, it's such a jewel. Yeah. It really is. It would be tragic to see this go away. So you can help out. And we will get links in our show notes, Morgan, with links to your website and all of that stuff. And you will find all the information if you want to help out with this capital campaign and volunteers, right? Because volunteers have to be the lifeblood too.
Yeah, volunteers are certainly a big part of our mission and how we're able to keep the lights on. I love our volunteers. They're definitely delightful people. So we have opportunities for docents. We have a gardening club. We also have seasonal opportunities if, you know, you have more time in the summer or Christmas.
Do I have to take a test to docent?
Yeah.
I would love to docent.
What does docent mean?
That means you take people around and you explain the history of here's the thing that you're looking at.
A
and
tour
this is
guide.
From 1792, and the guy who made it was named Ralph.
I can do that. I've done that before. I could be a dope docent.
But I mean, there must be a course or something. That do you have to take a course or something?
Kind of. So there's a little bit of a test. I'd say it's not on paper. It's more so you shadow like 10 tours or more, kind of depending on your comfort level. We've got a book that you can read that was written about the Pabst Mansion. And then once our docents feel like they are ready, they will take our staff on a tour just to, you know, kind of practice a little bit. They can take other docents on a tour or their family too. And then once they're ready, you know, we start getting them on the schedule. And, you know, certainly a fun part of working here is the docents and volunteers.
Oh, it has to be. And I would think, you know, every docent has their own, obviously you stick to the history. The history remains the same, but every docent has their own take on it, I'm sure, and their own little anecdotes that you can share and things to point out. And I just think that would be a really fun, if you like history, that would be a really, really fun thing to do.
Yeah, every tour is a little bit different. And it's funny, you know, in our offices, they're very, you know, it's right up against the exhibit floor. So I can always hear how, you know, different docents will talk about the same thing. So it's special.
Oh, man.
Another recent thing that changed at the Pabst Mansion is that you had to take down that pavilion, right?
Yes. So the pavilion, which was kind of a quirky little thing that Captain Pabst did. So 1893 Columbian Exposition World's Fair in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It was up for 1 year. It drew in millions of visitors. You know, these fairs used to be huge. And there was a whole floor that was dedicated to beer and brewing. So if you think about it, it's like a big trade show that lasts for a year.
Yeah, right.
So Captain Pabst had this terracotta pavilion that kind of matched the house. And in it, they would serve Pabst beer to the fairgoers. And once the fair was over with, most of these pavilions were, you know, probably junked or pieces were repurposed. And Captain Pabst was like, you know, I kind of like this. I'm going to move it to my mansion. So he moved it to the mansion, initially put it on the west lawn, then decided I didn't like that. I'm going to move it on the east side. And then later attached it to the house. So that's all well and fine, except that this pavilion was intended to be inside for 1 year.
Oh, no.
And when you put things that are designed to be inside outside, they don't always hold up the best. So the pavilion was not built with, you know, basic things that you would need. Like the roof didn't have drainage. There was no flashing. It was just, you know, not destined to be here forever. And I don't know if Captain Pabst intended it to be here forever either.
Right.
Well, Archdiocese made a lot of change to it. They bought the mansion from the family, I should say. It became a chapel. And then when we became a museum, it was our gift shop, which was amazing to have our gift shop connected. And over the years, it just, the weather caught up with it.
Yeah. I remember being there a couple of years ago with some friends, Morgan, and the gift shop was still in there, but you could tell there was very, very marked deterioration and it wasn't going to last. And I guess it's kind of nice to know that Captain Pabst didn't know everything.
Wow. Yeah. I just, you know, we were talking about before about how the high spending of these big beer barons. I remember the story of Augustus, Adolfo Bush had Tiffany windows in his children's play, three-story playhouse in their home in St. Louis. And I was going to say, did you know of anything that Captain Pabst said? That's it. He built a pavilion in Chicago and said, bring it to me in Milwaukee. I don't care how.
Yes. And I should say, so the way that we took it down was piece by piece, and it was scanned. And then each piece was also scanned. And then we salvaged about 70% of the terracotta.
Wow.
Wow.
So a lot more salvageable than we previously thought. However, it still had to come down. You know, the people who were taking it down said that we maybe had 2 years before pieces started to fall down, like potentially on people. So we saved the pieces, and, you know, at a later date, once we address the main house and the water infiltration, we'll be able to look at, you know, fundraising and getting that back together. So, you know, it's not the end of the story. It's more like the intermission.
I like that.
Well, keep us posted on everything. Keep us posted on the Capitol campaign. Very, very interesting. Best of luck. Morgan Sweet with the Pabst Mansion talking about their $5 million capital campaign efforts. Stay in touch. We'll get an update later.
Thank you.
News is coming up next. Stay here. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio in rainy downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call or text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream. If you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform that used to be Twitter. Baseball coming up. Brewers hosting the Dodgers this afternoon. Our broadcast starts at 12:35. You can listen to the game on WISS in Oshkosh or on WRJN 99.9 FM, 1400 AM in Racine, and 98.1 FM in Kenosha. Brewers hosting the Dodgers. Our broadcast starts today at 12:35. He joins us every Thursday at this time. The Acme Packing Company sports guru, Paul Noonan, is here. Speaking of the Brewers, Paul, they had a pretty good night last night.
They did. They played a very, very, very good game against what is just a murderer's row of a Dodgers lineup that has, you know, really hit them hard. I think it helped that they actually had Frankie Montes going last night. He hasn't been very good this year, but one thing the Brewers don't have in their starting lineup is really a reliable fireballer, especially with Freddie Peralta struggling so far. Mm. And the junk baller guys can be very effective. Colin Ray can be very effective. But when the Dodgers, when you're playing a team like the Dodgers, who are so good at putting bat to ball with some power, that sometimes can blow up in your face. And Montes, he throws a very straight fastball, but he throws it hard. And I think the Brewers are doing some good work with his location. He's working up in the zone a little bit more. It was a good win. They played really well and small balled their way to kind of steal one last night.
Yeah, with the Dodgers, I was just hoping for at least one victory in this four-game stand because it's the Dodgers. But something I didn't realize and I want to make mention really quick, is the fact that right now the Dodgers, though very, very good, the Brewers have three less victories and two more defeats than they do. So they're 71-50, we are 68-52. So on paper, that I feel like that means the Brewers are also doing very, very well. So I feel like the Dodgers coming into town, like this behemoth of the Dodgers, we're holding our own, I think, especially for a team that was counted out at the beginning of this season.
We are. They're not a perfect team by any stretch. One thing the Brewers definitively do better than the Dodgers is play defense, which, you know, not something that shows up on the stat sheet as readily or anything like that. But in terms of like run prevention, the Brewers are the equal of the Dodgers. It's just their bats are big. That's all. Yeah. But I'm pretty hopeful about today. I'm also, I was worried about getting swept in this series.
Me too.
And they avoided that. And they, the Brewers have their best pitcher going today. So I'm hopeful they can maybe steal a split in this one, which would be outstanding. This is their hardest part of the schedule of the whole year.
Yeah.
Tell us about Tobias Myers.
I love Tobias Myers because, first of all, he is a rookie and he won't get too much rookie of the year consideration because there's big names out there this year, like Paul Skeens on Pittsburgh. But my favorite Tobias Myers stat and the reason that he is such a good pitcher and he flew under radars is that the best pitch in baseball over the last 5 years or so is Devin Williams' Airbender, which is a changeup. It has a name. Like anytime a pitch has a name, it's a good pitch. And the Airbender is phenomenal. It people hit .097 against Devin Williams' Airbender. He is, of course, a relief pitcher. He's going max effort all the time. Tobias Myers' changeup this year, which he's thrown like 250 times, has been better than the Airbender. People also hit .097 against it, but they actually hit with less power than they do against Devin Williams' Airbender last year. Devin hasn't pitched that much this year, so we'll use last year's stats. So if you're wondering why Tobias Myers has come out of the blue and been this dominant pitcher, it is that changeup. Now, he's got some other good pitches in his arsenal, too. He's a four-pitch guy, but that pitch blows people away, and it makes him effective against opposite-hand pitching. So that's why, and so many teams have passed on him. The Brewers signed him after the White Sox cut him after having him for 2 months. that is a bad franchise. We can send them all thank you cards for doing that.
I love the stats of baseball. The idea is like that number you just presented between Devin Williams, those two pitchers, and you're like, I just love it. You're like, from last year, it's different because it's a .97. I'm like, how do you show me that spreadsheet? I'm just a basic baseball fan. I love baseball, but like when you start adding numbers in, I'm like, I need you to stop.
I just think it's amazing in Major League Baseball to throw any pitch that people hit under 100 against. Yeah. Like, that's like impossible. Yeah. Everybody hits 200 against the best pitches in baseball, except those.
Here is a question from a non-sports guru, and this is going to sound really stupid, but is it the way that the ball comes off their fingers, or is it to make these different pitches? I would think that I throw it forward and that is how I pitch, but there's obviously lots of other things going on. So can you explain that to me, Paul?
So pitch classification, I'm not going to say it's interesting because it's probably boring for everybody but me. But generally speaking, the spin and the horizontal movement is going to be the determining factor on how a pitch gets classified. And changeups are called changeups because they look like fastballs, but they're slower. But more than anything, they move to the same side as the arm you threw it with. So if you're right-handed, they move to the right. And changeups typically are effective against, so a righty will have it be effective against lefties because it'll break in towards them. So that's kind of what comes to it. Fastballs, generally pretty straight. They do move, but they're generally pretty straight. Curveballs move vertically more than they do horizontally. And then you get messy because like sliders move kind of diagonally.
Yeah.
But that's what classifies a pitch in terms of how we do statistics is basically how it moves coming out of the person's hand. The Airbender, by the way, is crazy. I recommend everybody watch Devin Williams throw in slow motion at some point in their life and then take a baseball outside and try to replicate it.
No.
And then have somebody ready to drive you to the hospital. I don't know how his elbow does not explode every time he throws.
Well, I'm writing this down because I want to do this after the show is over to watch Devin Williams do the Airbender.
I like that you just asked us to replicate something that a world elite athlete can do. Also, yeah, if you want, watching pitchers' arms in slow motion is horrifying. Because they're moving in ways that don't seem normal. They're bending in ways that seem like, as you said, why doesn't your arm just explode or just fall off of your shoulder? And honestly, the most quote unquote normal one ever seems to me are the guys who throw low and almost underhand because they're just bringing naturally up. Whereas like with the changeup, their arm just kind of just,
we'll take a look at that after the show. Paul Noonan is here from the Acme Packing Company, and we're talking sports. Let's talk prep about Packers training camp.
Packers training camp has been going generally pretty well so far. They've suffered a couple of, I would say, relatively minor injuries. Both of the rookie linebackers have missed quite a bit of time. Marshawn Lloyd, the rookie running back, pulled a hamstring on his first carry in the preseason game last week, which is unfortunate. It's honestly, Josh Jacobs should be good to carry the load there, but it's one of their weaker spots on the roster. The running back spot is not one of their strengths. But they, generally speaking, have been good, been healthy. They've gotten some breakout performances. They do need to address the kicker situation because both Anders Carlson and Greg Joseph have hit well under 90% of their camp kicks. They're like in the low 80s. And kicking in without pressure in a vacuum, NFL kickers should be making well over 90% of their kicks. It was a problem last year. It is still a problem this year. They've been cycling some guys in because they know it's a problem. They had Alex Hale, a rookie, in, who was having a nice start to camp, but then he kind of fell apart on Tuesday and missed like a bunch in a row. Not sure that's going to be good for him. But this is also the part of camp when other teams start to name their number one kicker, and there will be a lot of free agents. So, well, I would put my money on Anders Carlson because they probably still think they can develop him, and he does have a big leg. I think there's also a decent chance that the starting kicker is not on the roster yet.
Calvin.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to the running back room for a second. Do you have any insight on what exactly is going on with A.J. Dillon? I know after the preseason game, LaFleur was asked about A.J. Dillon's performance, and he was not happy. And then when A.J. Dillon was asked about it, he kind of gave a, if you're not in my house, I don't care about your opinion answer. So what do you think is going on there?
So I can't offer any insight into what they told J.J., but I can offer insight into how he graded out over that game in particular. And he was a mess, and he's been a mess in camp. So A.J. Dillon is a physical monster. He should be very able to get singled up on defenders, whether it's the linebackers, and push forward. One of the problems he's had consistently, and we have good metrics for this, actually. Our running back metrics are really good now. We can tell how many yards you should get based on where the defensive line is at the time of handoff. A.J. Dillon consistently underperforms what his expected yards gain are, and it's all about his vision. He will frequently make the wrong read, especially on defensive ends crashing down. And I'm sure in the Packer film rooms, this is pointed out to him. And I'm sure they've been pointing it out to him for about a year and a half now because it was a problem last year, too. So my guess is that this is AJ reacting to some just saltiness about scouting on his vision and about where he should be taking the ball. And honestly, it was a problem for even Marshawn Lloyd's one carry where he blew out his hamstring. He made the wrong read as well. They've had quite a few guys making wrong reads, especially the younger guys. And that's a big problem. They could use, I think, actually a veteran who at least knows the correct direction to go when he's handed the ball. But they do have a workhorse, so it should be okay. But I'm guessing Dillon's been getting a lot of criticism. He is back on a very, very cheap contract. It is the kind of contract where you are not guaranteed to make the team in the first place. And he has such a good reputation coming into this year that I'd still bet he makes the team. But he's not had a good performance. He has had a very bad performance. And the one thing about NFL running backs is that they are pretty fungible and they are easy to replace. And so he's worth watching as a possible surprise cut as we get a little further along here.
We're talking Packers preseason football with the Acme Packing Company's Paul Noonan. We got about 3 minutes left, Paul. What's going on with the battle for the backups, the battle for the backup quarterbacks?
The backup quarterbacks have turned into something really interesting. So Sean Clifford is the incumbent. He's a Penn State guy. And I think the Packers were not that enamored with him when they drafted him last year. Last year, I think what they really wanted to do was just have a backup quarterback who they didn't want to pay very much. And they had something happen to them in the real draft that often happens in fantasy football, which is that all of the quarterbacks got drafted all in a row, and he was the last one left. So they kind of got stuck with him. Sean Clifford, I think he's a pretty smart guy, but he is physically limited. His arm's not that good. He trusted his bad arm too much at Penn State through a bunch of interceptions. They drafted Michael Pratt this year quite late. And he played at a small school, and those guys often can kind of fool you, but he's interesting because his arm is a lot better than Clifford's is, and he put up pretty much equal accuracy numbers in college, and I think he's a bit more mobile too. He's looked really good in camp. And I think he fooled some scouts, including me. Thank you, Calvin. He played at Tulane. I have Chattanooga notes up for a different player. So I was trying to figure out between them. He played in an offense that tasked him with throwing on the run a lot. And it made it hard to judge how strong his arm actually was. He was thrown off platform a lot. He was getting hit a lot. It was kind of a mess of a college offense, but he played well. And he actually had a high completion percentage despite that. Now that we get to see him throw sort of in an NFL offense on platform, he's got a really good arm. He probably should have gone a lot higher. He probably should have been like a third round or lower pick. And I think he'll win the job. And, you know, when the Packers had Brett Favre, they would do things like this. And they would cycle through good quarterbacks, that Matt Hasselbeck and Mark Brunell and Aaron Brooks, who all became starters. I wouldn't be surprised if this is kind of the start of a new trend there. They're so good at developing guys that if they can get guys with raw talent, that they can turn them into something. Sean Clifford doesn't really have the arm strength, I think, to be turned into anything, but I think Pratt does. And so I think they may have a winner on their hands with him.
All right.
All right. I'm feeling well informed. I take all of your information, Paul, for football and go, yes.
Paul Noonan is with the Acme Packing Company. He joins us every other Thursday. Thank you so much, Paul. We'll see you in a couple.
Sounds good. Thanks, all.
Stay with us. Brittany Merlot, Weather and Wine with Brittany Merlot on the way next. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B on the board. Coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform that Elon continues to actively ruin. Don't forget, we have baseball coming your way. If you would like to listen to the game, you can't listen to it on the stream. You do have to listen to it on terrestrial radio. Our broadcasts start at 12:35 today. Brewers hosting the Dodgers. Listen on WRCE in Richland Center and also on WISS in Oshkosh if you would like to hear the Brewers hosting the Dodgers. Again, our broadcast starts at 12:35. She joins us every Thursday at this time for a segment we call Weather and Wine. Brittany Merlot is here. Good morning, Brittany. Is it raining in Wausau?
Oh, we're whining here in Wausau, that's for sure. How about you?
Is it because of all the rain?
Yes, yes, unfortunately. We've already got some areas localized that's flooding the streets. You know, you can see in the lower areas some of the drains that haven't been cleared. They're clogging and flooding areas. So we've gotten a decent amount, anywhere from half an inch to an inch and a half for the northern half of the state.
That's a lot of rain. I mean, yes. Certainly it's no 30 inches, but still an inch and a half of rain is still a fair amount of rain.
It's no, tropical hurricane, but it sure is our Midwest hurricane. We'll call it that.
Absolutely.
Now, right now we in Waukesha, it was raining before. It seems like it's let up a little bit or it's a little drizzle happening. Something you said this morning that was interesting with Pat was we don't want to see sunshine today because of how that. Okay. So would you do me a favor? Explain that for me again, because when I heard you say that, I'm like, but why not? I love sunshine. Rain makes me not mow my lawn.
Right. Now, that's the natural, reaction. You want the sunshine. You want the rain to end. This is no fun for anyone. But what's going to happen on days like today, when you have a big frontal system pushing in, I mean, we have a warm front following a trailing cold front. We've also got a low-level jet that's going to kick in this evening. I'll get to that in a little bit as well. But with all of those things going on, that sunshine, any sun peeking through, is actually creating more and more instability right there in your location. So in a sense, it's got more juice to really tap into, which could create stronger storms, heavier downpours, maybe some more rotation that could create a tornado warning. all of those things today. So sunshine, no good.
Because it's just going to heat things up. And as you said, then that's going to bring more instability to the air and potentially lead to stronger storms and more severe weather.
Exactly. Yeah.
How long is the rain going to be with us? Is this going to end today or tomorrow or when?
Oh, man, I'm the bearer of bad news always.
Not always. You are not always the bearer of bad news.
Sometimes. Okay, but all right. So here's what's happening. This big low pressure system is just slowly meandering across the state. It's not even here yet. So we've got today. We've got tomorrow. We're going to still see some scattered showers lingering into our Saturday. And the closer you are to Lake Michigan, you might see some still into Sunday.
Wow.
Wow.
So it's going to be a minute. And severe weather, too, potentially tonight.
Now, I don't, you know, we should focus on day by day and week by week. But, you know, now that state fair is over and kids are going back to school, we start thinking towards fall. And we start thinking about, I heard someone say they saw leaves already starting to change some colors.
Brittany, that was you.
Yep. Oh, that was me.
Yeah. All right. So, what are we looking forward to in the next, I know it's hard to go past maybe 10, 15 days, but what are we starting to look at as far as like cooling down, or are we going to have a longer summer into September, or summer, I should say summer weather into September? And, you know, what are you seeing in the next few weeks?
Well, what I'm seeing right now is a below average trend, right? So this big low pressure system is one that you kind of see in the fall months where those big winds tug each other when you got the cold up north, the warm down south. So we're already seeing those systems grow in size. That's my first indication that fall may be here earlier. The next one is, of course, the outlook for temperatures will be below average for next week and the following week as well. So those two things, plus I was up north, saw the leaves changing colors, and not to mention, we're shifting to a La Nina. So a La Nina pattern is about to happen, and that always brings cooler weather and a little bit more activity come winter months as well.
So does that mean the potential for bigger snow?
Yes. Yes, it does.
That's good for the businesses up north. Not for me for shoveling.
Speaking about all of this rain, though, Brittany, I do want to throw this in, and it might sound inconsequential, but there was an article in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel just talking about MMSD asking people to hold back on their water usage. So if at all possible, no matter where you are, if you're getting larger amounts of rain, hold off on doing your laundry.
Yeah.
If you can, hold off on, you know, running dishes and loads of dishes, because as more of this rainwater is getting into our sewage systems, and then that can lead to more problems. So certainly if you can hold off on doing the wash, I'm always looking for an excuse not to do my laundry. So
yes,
now I have one.
Thank you, Jane.
Yes. Well, you have my permission not to do your laundry.
It's the laziest chore there is. You put the laundry in the laundry, you put it in the machine, and then someone's like, what are you doing? I'm doing laundry.
No, I have to go down at 15 minutes in, because that's when the first drain. And if I don't wrangle the little hose, it will shoot water all over the basement floor.
Okay, oh, well, that sounds like a your house problem.
I'm exhausted just thinking about it.
But I guess the question is, are they going to keep us aware, or is it like, give it 3 days, give it 2 days? Like, how long do we have to wait? That's the question I would have.
Well, I would say certainly today.
Yeah.
I would hold off, and probably even tomorrow. And if you said, Brittany, too, we might have some more potential for severe storms tonight.
Yes, yes. And then again tomorrow as well. So I would probably hold off at least until Saturday, because that's the main heavier hits of rain. And the problem is for them is they can't, you know, filter it fast enough.
What
no
if I live
time.
No laundry till Sunday.
What if I live in Kenosha?
Especially Kenosha. You can't even do laundry till Monday.
Thank you, Jane. You heard that, everybody? That was science talking right there.
Brittany Merlot joins us every Thursday at this time for Weather and Wine. Thank you so much, Brittany. Have a great day. Stay dry.
Thank you. You as well.
All right. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers. Without you guys, absolutely nothing works. Without you, listeners and callers and texters, we mean nothing. It means the world. Thank you so very, very much. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Keep it right here. News is next, followed by Todd Alba. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. See you tomorrow.